So I think that with crypto becoming a lot more retail, it's more than just what do you hold in your wallet.
Why are they cutting rates? It makes no sense, other than they want to juice the financial markets even more.
It's not a new form of wealth begins.
What is your meme token and what is it about?
You want alpha? We're sitting down IRL with the biggest and brightest minds in the industry to bring you what crypto's biggest names are talking about, deploying on, building on, and investing in, like only Crypto Banter can do. You're in for a wild ride here at Token 2049. Welcome to Singapore, the biggest week in crypto we've seen possibly ever. With the crowds converging on the city by the bay for a week of Token 2049, 800 side events, and of course the F1. This special episode is brought to you by Fastex, a complete ecosystem reshaping the Web3 experience. We're back in Singapore, and this time we're here for Token 2049. You could say that we're in the beginning of the altcoin bull market, and we're here for the biggest crypto conference in the world. Let's go take a look inside. What's inside? Now officially the world's largest crypto gathering. This isn't just Bitcoin or ETH, Solana or blockchain or regulation. This is crypto. 20,000 hardcore crypto traders, workers and enthusiasts, all comprising a critical mass in crypto that despite a sideways market for the time being, shows no signs of slowing down. Contrary to what the naysayers may be saying. Just look around. Thousands of people working day and night in this industry from across the world. From across a litany of exchanges, blockchains, protocols, dApps, DAOs, DeFis, and much more from every corner of the earth. And as always, you have Crypto Banter, right here, IRL, like no other channel in the cryptosphere. This time, bring our wider team in full force to access the full powerful network in crypto.
A pleasure. You know we are family.
We are family.
Yes.
So, who's here? Crypto's leading voices. We had Vitalik going viral, singing a song on stage.
A new form of wealth begins.
Hey, who here actually remembers someone?
Anatoly on the floor showing his prized possession, the new Solana mobile phone. You never know who you'll see here. Everyone from Charles Hoskinson and the team from Cardano to Brian Johnson, the longevity guru, who's making inroads into our tech-savvy crypto community, advocating for us to live, well, healthier lives.
By the way, I just helped you guys not die.
And drawing huge crowds, the F1 heavyweights. Max Verstappen and Lando Norris were live on stage. It was huge.
The whole game that I'm in is sort of me game, it's a team game.
The team is everything.
Forget F1 though, we're here for the crypto, and Token 2049 delivers on the alpha. This is Asia, where the pendulum swung, where the majority of spot trading happens. And this is all happening on the week that the Fed announced the first 50 basis point rate hike. All the betting markets like Polymarket, whose co-founder's on stage, taking bets with the likes of the legend Arthur Hayes, predicting the higher rate cut, calling for a bullish kickoff to some alts. Yakti.
All right. It's a great day today. It's fucking Fed Day. Our favorite person, Jerome Powell, is going to grace us with 25, 50, 75, whatever the fuck he decides to do tonight while you're all drinking at the bar.
That's right. The spirit on the floor is high, along with the long-term bullish projections post-US election. Speaking of elections, Balaji was here from the network state, and he was calling for blockchain technology to meet voting.
It's a cryptographically verifiable vote, which you can prove you joined, you can see who others joined, and any third party can verify that these are real people rather than bots. It's proof by running proof of human.
Nick Carter was debating stablecoins.
You know, I think stablecoins are obviously a huge success story for great stablecoin entrepreneurs. We have Guy Young from Athena, Sam from Frax, Jose from PayPal, Nick Van Eck from Agora.
Me on a panel doing the same across emerging markets.
As you may know, I'm from South Africa, which is an emerging market. We've got a Turk, we've got an Argentinian, and then we've got an American.
Carl Samani from Multicoin talking all things infrastructure.
So do you agree that infrastructure is overfunded relative to applications or no?
Yes.
You do think so?
Yeah.
Olaf Carlson Wee from Polychain unlocking some AI innovation.
First is that bots can sort of create any market that they want.
And always on the AI cutting edge, Ben from SingularityNet with the robots.
Time is a limited resource.
Yeah, we're running out of time, but we've got 39 more seconds.
From the future to the now, we got insights into the biggest projects making the most headways as we speak. Two big headliners included Berachain, replete with their bearish-like founder on stage, to Pudgy Penguins making their case for real-world adoption. You had RWAs making a splash like Mantra in the upcoming October push, and big efforts from the likes of Near, Akash, Incentive, and Steppen, building, building, and building. Outside the halls, and to provide some real-world activity, you had everything from paddle courts playing, a rock climb reaching for new heights, robots making espresso, and even a cold plunge activation outside in the sizzling Singapore heat. What a feat to pull off. Off-site 800 events tore through Singapore non-stop. There's not enough time in the show to show you them all, but as an example, Sui's Builder House, where projects are building on top of the blustering chain, showed off their wares. And Jeremy Allaire made a big announcement, bringing USDC to Sui today.
We've launched, and this is as of just last week, we've seen over $16 trillion in on-chain transactions using USDC. USDC, CCTP, Sui, very sweet.
I have two questions for you. How do you make a decision as to which chain you support?
I've got more questions, but I guess I've only got so much time. Next, it was off to Santosa, the island paradise, where a yacht party was filled with KOLs. By night, it was out to killer events like OKEX's big party at Marquee, with lines as far as you can see. The endless nights only fuel the fire on the floor back at Token 2049. And commanding attention, Iggy Azalea, heralding all things Mother Token with her panel with Ansem and Joe McCann, her partner in the project, speaking about why the attention economy will only draw crypto's command.
So I think that with crypto becoming a lot more retail, it's undeniable that we're going to see that type of thing happen in meme tokens too, where it's more than just what do you hold in your wallet.
Oh yeah.
It's beyond that. If the meme token can become a bigger brand or a persona that somebody can identify with and say, yes, this is me, and all these brands are me that are associated with it, and this is a wider, more cultural thing that's happening here that I see myself in and want to be a part of, and these people in this community also are this, so I want to come and be here with that.
I have to say, I've always been skeptical of celebrities coming into crypto, but after hearing Iggy on stage, she's the real deal. She's a businesswoman, she's building a real brand in crypto, and she's bringing a wider audience into the crypto world.
I think what's really important beyond just the integration of the token into these sorts of products or things being relevant in future, but that they come with a discount or they come with an incentive to make the user say, okay, this club is valuable to me because I have these experiences that are on offer to me beyond the experience of a digital community. And it's going to have to develop that way for it to remain competitive here if we're going to have access to crypto freely.
From the speaker stage, let's go to our crypto banter set and hear from one of Iggy's partners, Joe McCann. He's a radical finance whiz who knows how to tie things together. And as you can see from the hype around the stage, people listen. Our set was surrounded with people including Ansem and Miles, our former host from Banter.
Joe, you must be super happy. Rate cuts yesterday. You called a 50 basis point rate cut a long time ago when no one was talking about a 50 basis point rate cut. Why were you so confident?
Look, I mean, Asymmetric is, you know, a macro shop dressed up in crypto clothing. Me and my trading partner have almost 50 years combined experience trading macro products, cross-asset, cross-geo, every type of, you know, instrument you could imagine. And the reality is crypto is just another sleeve within a macro portfolio. We believe that crypto is the optimal expression of macro today. So for us, it was kind of obvious. We looked at the data and we had a very strong view that real rates, which is the, you know, kind of the, call it the Fed funds rate or the rate that you can get in a savings account minus inflation, that's the general way of looking at it, was about 3%, which historically is 200% higher than the neutral rate, which is 1. And so the fact that you started to see a softening in the labor market and clear disinflationary metrics on the inflation side, that is enough firepower to get the Fed to cut 50 because they didn't cut in July. And so our view was, way back at the beginning of July, because remember the Fed was supposed to cut at the end of July meeting. At the beginning of July, we wrote explicitly, if the Fed does not cut 25 in July, they must do 50 in September. And everyone thought we were crazy, and we just knew it was math.
Bitcoin jumped, went over 60,000. Is this the beginning of the crazy run, or are there still bumps along the way?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a great question. So at Asymmetric, one of the things that we track is global liquidity. The Fed is a major component of this, but so is the People's Bank of China, collateral ratios on US treasuries, the shadow monetary base, and other central banks and their balance sheets. And so historically, Q4 is the time of the year where you'll start to see in a liquidity cycle that's about every 5 to 6 years, tick up. Moreover, right now we're at the end of September. In the United States, there's a thing called the Treasury General Account, the TGA. It's basically like the Treasury's checking account. They just collected a lot of money on corporate taxes due on September 15th. That pulls liquidity out of the system. Come October 1st, Janet Yellen is shoving that butt back into the market. So what we should expect to see at the beginning of October is a rise in U.S. liquidity, which also begets liquidity around the globe.
Actually, I want to pivot the conversation before we get there. You were with Iggy on stage today. And I must say, like, I've been pretty skeptical of celeb tokens, and I've been more skeptical of Iggy. She seems like she's the real deal. What did you pick up that makes her the real deal?
She thinks like an entrepreneur. She thinks like a business person. She understands the virality of brand recognition and how things work with culture. That is a very, very rare combination. When I had dinner with her back in June and we were chatting about things, the level of depth that she brings to the understanding of culture, and look, she even said it on stage, she's been in crypto for 4 months and she's had more fun than she's had like her entire music career, right? That's not lip service. She genuinely feels this way. And so her path of what she's doing, like Iggy is a retired musician. She's not doing music anymore. She's a businesswoman. Right? And so ask yourself this question. A celebrity that has 70 million followers on social media at a global scale, record set with Billboard, you know, top charts, all of these music accolades, why would she be so focused on the mother community when she could make plenty of money doing the standard tequila brand or the perfume or whatever? Why is that the case? She's setting a standard and raising the bar for how celebrities can now build a community that has a brand in and of itself.
So she's going to build the playbook for other celebrities to use. How do you monetize that playbook?
So Ryan Reynolds, who's a very famous actor, launched a mobile virtual network operator, you know, phone service. He also launched a gin, right? Rihanna launched Fenty, a cosmetics line, right? So are they copying each other's playbooks? No, they're doing what celebrities do, is they're using their platform to create new products or businesses that can engage with the folks that want to be associated with Rihanna. So that's the same concept with something like, say, a meme coin, a culture coin, a celeb coin, is how do we get people to understand that this isn't like you have to do exactly what Iggy did? What you have to understand is that if you are the meme coin, there's no brand there, and you need to build a brand around your community that can then extend into other aspects of the business empire that you're creating, which is exactly what Iggy's doing.
Well, I hope she succeeds, because I think she is the real deal. Joe, thank you so much, and well done, bro. You've been killing it.
Thank you very much.
Killing it indeed. Also killing it, as always, and drawing huge crowds, is Arthur Hayes. He talked all things rate cuts, and again, yachty.
I wanted to talk today about what sort of crypto trades make sense and don't make sense in a falling interest rate environment.
Arthur, we finally had the rate cuts. We got 0.5, 50 basis point rate cuts. Were you expecting that?
Yes and no. I don't think it matters. We've had one half of the equation. That's the Fed. The BOJ meets tomorrow, and we'll see what they do.
That's like a big interest rate cut in such a short period of time. How does that affect the thesis?
Well, I think it aligns with they want to get Kamala Harris reelected. And they believe that if they lower the price of money, then the stock market does well, people are employed, they feel good on election day, and they vote the right way, which is Kamala Harris. And so that's why they're cutting rates when the U.S. economy is very strong, low unemployment, real GDP growth quarter on quarter. Why are they cutting rates? It makes no sense, other than they want to juice the financial markets even more, but I believe it's not going to have the intended effect that they believe.
Okay, tell me why not.
Because of dollar yen. So if the market believes that the Fed is going to be extremely aggressive, dollar yen continues to strengthen. The yen strengthens against the dollar. And that yields more carry trade unwind. We saw what happens when the market aggressively unwinds leveraged Japanese carry trades from July 31st to August, I think, 5th or 6th, a few weeks ago. So we're going to have a repeat of that.
Under the assumption the Bank of Japan does nothing tomorrow and they keep status quo, how do you position yourself between now in the next 6 months?
I think you wait. The market's going to tell you what to do. I think, again, they're going to print more money, but I do still think that if you're talking about 100 basis points of rate cuts in 2 months, that's pretty aggressive. If you borrowed yen, and you watch that differential narrow this quickly in a few trading days, man, you are going to try to get out. You are selling what you can right now. And so I think that this is sort of a calm before the storm, and we're going to see some real fireworks in the next weeks or so.
So you're not actually positioning yourself as full bull mode. We're going into altcoin season. You're saying, hold on, caution. If they raise if they drop dollar interest rates, the whole trade might actually close.
Yeah, but I'm long as well. It's more like, do I really want to be adding to positions? I have spare cash. Right now it's sitting and earning, I don't know, 5% and you know, short-dated T-bills. When do I move that cash out of T-bills? Because I know the rates are coming down, my interest income is coming down. When do I move more cash into crypto? That's the question that I have in my mind right now. And right now I'm in a holding pattern. I'm just going to wait and see.
And while you're waiting and seeing, you're obviously looking at certain narratives and you're thinking, hold on, when I allocate, these are the narratives I'm going to be allocating into. What are the narratives that you're kind of going, okay, if the market runs, then I'm allocating into these narratives. What are you looking at?
So I spoke on stage yesterday about what happens when rates fall. A lot of trades in crypto are interest rate sensitive. So number one is Athena.
Yes.
The Athena basis rate is close to or below US Treasury bills. Why would I be in Athena? So as T-bills drop and expected to drop, I believe that TVL grows in Athena and the price goes up. Ethereum is an internet bond, right? It yields 3-4% on the staking yield. As that rate exceeds the Treasury bill rate or the expected Treasury bill rate, Ethereum gets a bid as well. Same with EtherFi, which is the leading ETH staking non-custodial platform.
Altcoins have had a tough time. Question is, more Bitcoin or more altcoins now at this part of the cycle?
I would go more in the majors. Bitcoin, ETH, Solana. That's because I believe that they're going to attract more capital. They'll perform well. If we have the wealth effect, say Bitcoin's 100,000, then I want to be in altcoins. Look at these things, they're down 95% from like the highs in April. They start to become a lot more attractive as I'm up on my Bitcoin positions.
Okay, so we're going to wait for see what happens on Friday, wait for the Bank of Japan. Hopefully they do nothing and we go to Valhalla.
Maybe, we'll see.
See you later, my friend.
Awesome.
I say Valhalla. As you can see, Arthur draws crowds wherever he goes, and deservedly so after all he's done for crypto. So Arthur's bullish, but let's hear what the other leading indicators in crypto, the funds and the VCs, think about these rate cuts. So Vance, we're sitting here, it's the eve of the first rate cut in, say, 5 years.
Yeah.
We've been moving sideways on the markets for a long time. A lot of people have been shaken out by the sideways movement. How are you feeling on the eve of the first rate cut in 5 years?
I feel pretty incredible, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I would say, from big tech to commodities to NVIDIA, everything has been in a range for 6 months. Like, everyone is universally unhappy with this range. And I think we're going to break out of it. And I think we're 50 days away from the election as well. That'll be huge. And, you know, maybe Trump is in charge of the Federal Reserve. Maybe that plays out. But any way you slice it, we're cutting rates 300 basis points at minimum. And so that will be a huge tailwind for basically every asset class.
All right, so you were on the stage today and you were talking about investment thesis and where you guys are going. One of the things that came up is like, is it time to start investing in the apps and maybe time to take our foot off the accelerator, investing in the layer ones and the base layer infrastructure. How do you feel about that? I mean, we're in a landscape where you've got Sol, which has got arguably pump.fun making everything work. You've got ETH, which is, bleeding slowly down and getting a lot of hate. Have we solved the L1 problem, or is there still like a big gap which is screaming we should still be investing in L1s?
I mean, you've probably seen the Sol transaction volume and pump fund volume. It feels like that's slowing pretty considerably, and our philosophy is that all these chains will eventually move to this L2 roadmap. ETH is just the furthest along, and so no one will escape, you know, this maturing of the chain that needs to happen. But I think in terms of apps versus infrastructure, Bearchain has POL, it has all these enshrined apps. It has both apps and infrastructure encompassed in the valuation of the chain, and you can probably get to a few hundred million of revenue just from that alone. And there's so much money in crypto that focusing on the endogenous use cases of DeFi, we've yet to see anybody pull that off. And, you know, people are like, well, Sol flip ETH, I mean, maybe it's like kind of interesting, but not really. But like, will Bearchain take a real shot at Sol? I think that will happen.
So you brought up Bearchain. What's all the excitement about it?
I think it's number one, aligning all the primitives and the L2s that are in the ecosystem. Number two, it's about having IP that can scale and people be associated with. The bear is actually pretty convincing from just a content perspective. And then I think, frankly, people are yearning for an ecosystem that is aligned and that can stay aligned long term. And, you know, Helium launched an L2 on Solana. that is not part of what that is supposed to be. And, you know, if Pump Fund leaves, there's not much there. And so I think there is some cognitive dissonance towards people saying, you know, oh, you know, VCs investing in private markets at $1 billion FTV is bad, but Solana at $80 billion is somehow justifiable. I think there's a lot more risk in the latter. But, you know, for us, we don't think the L1s of this cycle have launched yet. We think it's Monad, we think it's Bera, and I think those are going to be a pretty good dogfight in terms of who wins.
When do you think the chain actually launches?
Q4.
Where are you seeing more opportunities today, honestly?
Can't get into specific token names, but things that are fundamentally driven, that have real revenues and traction and earnings, or things that have real communities, that's the barbell for us.
VC market, more value today, or liquid market, more value today with suppressed and depressed prices?
You can't say one or the other. I mean, we do both. You know, there are amazing opportunities in the liquid market. There's amazing opportunities in venture. I personally hope Bear Chain comes out pretty low so that there's meat on the bone for retail. And, you know, you can have a Solana-style story with a chain that launches like that. So we're excited.
Narratives that you're excited about. So Bear Chain, alignment of incentives.
Alignment.
So I agree with you, and that's my thesis for investment.
Extraction is out. No more, like, you can see the pump fund roller coaster starting to slow. And I think the extraction narrative is similar to the ICO bubble, where eventually the money moves kind of up and then it gets too top heavy and it falls over. And I think you see that with just, you know, pump fund dump trucking Sol, you know, week after week after week, and unlocks coming. And every chain has to deal with unlocks. You know, ETH is going through that, Bitcoin's going through that, Solana will go through that, but it's just all about the timing and where it is in the cycle. Because if you think that next year is where it's going to be most bullish, you want to be in assets that are fundamentally driven, community-oriented, that are through their unlocks.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Vance, it's been amazing having you on Banter. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
To repeat, be in assets that are fundamentally driven, community-oriented, and through with their unlocks. Another fund that's fundamental to the ecosystem, Founders Fund. This is where Joey Krug's at, and he's investing in things that probably surprise you.
So Joey, you come here every year, every time we see you, you're giving us narratives. You seem to have this ability to see around the corners. What are the narratives that you're looking at now? Do you believe that we've solved the layer one problem, or is that problem not yet solved?
I'm certainly still open to new layer ones. I think it's sort of largely solved, though, for the most part. Like, you have, you know, Solana, and then you have Ethereum, and all the layer twos built on top of Ethereum. And we haven't really, like, ran into the throughput constraints yet. You know, hopefully some of the consumer stuff happening will actually start to make there be a problem. But to date, you know, I'd say there's not really any scaling problem at this point, for the most part.
Why do you think ETH has become the most hated trade of the cycle, so to speak? Why have people lost so much interest in it?
I think there's two reasons. One is there's a lot of question marks people have about, like, how much value will layer twos versus Ethereum capture. And then I think but that's not even priced into layer twos, right? If that were the sole reason, you'd expect layer twos to go up a lot. And they've actually underperformed ETH. I think the other reason is I actually think sort of the pricing dynamics for the hard fork that happened earlier this year that added blob space for layer twos. I think the pricing is kind of, like, economically wrong. Like, I think Ethereum is basically, maybe not on purpose, but accidentally undercharging layer twos. Because if you're a layer two, your alternative is to go to layer one, but that's really expensive. Solana spends like $1 billion in incentives a month. And so each layer one could charge layer two.
What kind of things are exciting you? I mean, we just had a huge meme coin cycle. First of all, were you encouraged by the meme coin cycle?
I mean, neither here nor there on it. I own some, like, dog with hat, or, you know, because I thought it was funny. But I think it's fine. Like, I'm one of those people who believes that, you know, you should be able to use blockchains for whatever you want. And if you want to trade memes, like, that's fine with me. But I think in terms of what we're looking at, though, it's mostly early stage. We still look at infrastructure, early stage infrastructure, and then also early stage application layer stuff. Like, on the application layer, we invested in Polymarket recently, and then also Pudgy Penguins.
Tell me about Pudgy Penguins.
One is, they're kind of one of the only things in crypto that has, like, a negative customer acquisition cost. Like, they get paid to acquire customers. And the way it works is they sell tons of these penguins, physical penguin, like, stuffed animals and stuff, in, like, every Target and Walmart in the United States. And then each of those comes with a QR, which you scan, and it onboards you to, like, a lot of the Pudgy kind of, like, stuff online. Eventually, they're going to launch their own layer two that's, like, focusing more on consumer use cases. And I think essentially they just have, like, a really great brand.
What else? Give me one more narrative that you guys are bullish on.
I think the Bitcoin L2 thing is actually going to eventually happen. It's going to take a while. Like Arbitrum, you know, took 2 or 3 years to launch, right? And so it's not like easy to build something new. But I do think there's like this huge amount of capital in Bitcoin that's sort of just sitting there that you could use to like borrow against your Bitcoin, which was obviously huge last cycle, but it was all these centralized businesses and they all blew up, right? But if you do it in a decentralized way, like MakerDAO or like Aave style, you don't have those same risks. So,
Joey, thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you too.
And what's so good to see is that they're seeing the value of the real-world adoption of Pudgy Penguins. So it's only fitting that we walk straight from our set to the stage and bring Luca, the founder of Pudgy Penguins, to the Banter Fam.
So 2 seconds ago, you heard from Joey Krug, who said one of the most exciting consumer applications of blockchain was Pudgy Penguins. So I managed to track down the CEO of Pudgy Penguins. Here he is. I got Luca with me. Why is everyone so excited, bro? Tell me what's going on.
I think we've been pioneering the consumer crypto revolution for 2.5 years now, right? I think when you look at what Pudgy Penguins is doing, it's one of the only brands in which the entire family is getting around together. We're in Walmart, we're in Target, we're selling 150,000 toys every single month. Those toys are actually bringing people on chain, so they're working like Trojan horses. And I think we're just doing something that I think crypto's desperately needed.
What made you guys different from all the other NFT projects?
I think we managed expectations. We didn't promise the world. We built a real business. We built that business with our community. And we did nothing but just continuously give value to our holders and to our group. And we just made a promise and we delivered on that promise.
Tell me about the Pudgy Penguins business.
I think there's two sides of the business. One is the traditional IP business, which you know, sells toys, does licensing, has games. Again, our toy business is doing phenomenally well. Our licensing business is doing phenomenally well. I mean, we're partnering with some of the biggest and best brands around the world. Like I had mentioned a little bit earlier, we're in 10,000 retailers around the country. 150,000 toys we're selling every single week or every single month. So when you look at it from that perspective, like we're a self-sustaining business that's not dependent on going to our community and selling them more crypto goods, whether it's NFTs or tokens. So I think people have a lot of respect for what we've done.
Okay, now Joey teased a layer two. Tell me about how this whole thing feeds into a layer two.
So I think when you look at what Pudgy Penguins has accomplished is we've just created a mascot within crypto and a community within crypto that I think is unparalleled. And ultimately, we also have been building for consumer in a way that I think very few have. But when building for consumer, I was kind of exploring all these other L2s and I realized, look, nobody's really building for consumer the way that I need them to build to ultimately solve the problems that I need to be that I need to have solved. So rather than just waiting for somebody to go build an L2 that's positioned for consumers, that's going to solve the problems that I need them to solve, I was like, look, I see the same opportunity that we saw in NFTs that I see in the L2 landscape where, look, I don't think any of these guys are really doing the things that I need them to do, so I'm just going to do it myself. So we want...
Under the assumption that there's 100,000 people watching us now,
How
do they get involved?
You got to give us a follow, Abstract Chain on X, ABS on Instagram, and just stay up to date and just keep updated with all the new announcements.
And if I want to invest in the Pudgy Penguins ecosystem, is the only way to do it still to buy the NFTs?
I think right now it's just for the NFTs. And obviously you can be a part of the brand and be a part of the community in some small way. Go to your local Walmart, go to your local Target. We're also in Smith's and a bunch of other places around the world. But if you really want to have all the perks that come with owning a Pudgy Penguins, the status, the airdrops, the community, the access, you've got to buy an NFT.
Well, listen, brother, well done. I think what you guys have achieved is amazing.
Thank you.
And I wish you guys all the success in the future, and we'll be following you guys.
I appreciate it, my friend. Thank you.
Now, let's take a break from all things Token 2049. As you saw earlier, you can play some paddle, you can climb a rock wall, you can get an espresso made by a robot, or you can even take a cold plunge. Take your pick. Remember, Banter fam, we can't bring you this exclusive coverage IRL that no other channel can bring you without our sponsors. This special episode is brought to you by Fastex, a complete ecosystem reshaping the Web3 experience. Fastex Exchange offers a secure, compliant platform for digital trading assets, while the wider ecosystem includes Fastex Card, Fastex Wallet, the FTNFT Marketplace, and the Yo Cerebro Metaverse. We're back to business here in Singapore, Token 2049, just ahead of F1 and just ahead of the curve. For me, I'm taking to the stage to get people up to speed on stablecoins and their uses in emerging markets. This is truly one of the biggest and most powerful use of blockchain's power. Here's, well, me.
Blockchain is actually needed in emerging markets. If you think about what blockchain is effectively the ability to create digital value that you can send and trade immediately. So this really spends some time understanding the problem for people to understand emerging markets and then understand how and what emerging markets need in order for Bitcoin, blockchain, stablecoin, any kind of blockchain application to actually fit.
I talked to an Argentinian, a Turk, and an American who's done business in China. And ironically, as I got off the stage, Nick Carter gave a similar talk on stablecoins. Let's see what he has to say about one of crypto's most potent packs of power.
Globalized payments system.
So as you just saw, I did a panel on the stage talking about emerging markets. And on that panel, we spoke about the fact that there's actually two real use cases in emerging markets. One is people buy Bitcoin to store their value. And two, people actually buy stablecoins not only to store value, but to actually transfer money across borders where it's very important. Just as I got off the stage, Nick Carter got on the stage with a very similar thesis. So Nick, you agree that stablecoins as an application shouldn't be overlooked as just a small feat. It's one of the biggest things we've ever done.
Oh, certainly. I think it's the killer app of crypto. I mean, if you look at the numbers, if you add up all of the value settled on blockchains today, stablecoins are 50% of that. Bitcoin and Ether, you know, and all the other L1s together make up the other 50%. So as far as I can tell, stablecoins are the number one feature of blockchains, the number one thing that people do with blockchains.
So in emerging markets, people use USD stablecoins actually to protect their value. So I know we use Bitcoin to protect our value, but in emerging markets, they just want to be pegged to the US dollar, and that's a massive, massive use case. You spoke about dollarization. Tell me a little bit about what you're seeing out there.
Yeah, and you know, I don't want to discount the fact that people are using Bitcoin anywhere on Earth to save their wealth, but I think it's been an overlooked thing that this crypto dollarization is happening. So dollarization refers to the phenomenon where individuals in a high inflation country spontaneously re-denominate their savings into another currency like the dollar. And we just did a study. We published it last week. We did a study of Nigeria, India, Turkey, Brazil, and Indonesia. These are five big middle-income nations with high crypto adoption. And we went and asked 2,500 people, what do you do with stablecoins? The number one thing was access to the crypto economy, fine. The number two thing was saving their wealth in dollars, right? And so they do plenty of other stuff too. They do cross-border transfers. They do remittances with stablecoins. They do payroll in stablecoins. But it's very striking to see of the non-crypto use cases, the main thing they do is save and store their wealth in dollars in a format that's self-custodial on their own smartphone that can't be interfered with by the government and is completely portable. And of those five nations I mentioned, Nigeria was the number one.
So you love stablecoins, you love Bitcoins, you were accused of being a Bitcoin maxi for a long period of time until eventually you kind of said, I'm not a Bitcoin maxi anymore. Yeah. What else are you looking at? Like, what else excites you in this game?
Yeah, now I get accused of being too moderate on Bitcoin, so you can't please everyone. You know, we spent a lot of time on the new Bitcoin Renaissance, call it Bitcoin Season 2, all these Bitcoin L2s that are being built to make Bitcoin more expressive, more programmable, more linked to other blockchains. That was a problem for a long time. Bitcoin was an island off by itself. It wasn't really connected to the crypto industry at large. It wasn't connected to these other successful blockchains. So there's protocols that I like Bob, which is bring the EVM to Bitcoin, where investors, of course, Babylon, which is fascinating. They're bringing Bitcoin's assurances, the settlement quality, allowing other proof-of-stake blockchains to leverage that to increase their own security. That's something that really excites me, and I'm glad to see Bitcoin break out of its stasis and becoming more tightly integrated to the rest of the crypto space.
So as someone who's got, I would say, a relatively solid purist view, how do you, when you see the market aping into shitcoin meme coins, how does that, what is that for you in through your lens, a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't mind it. I mean, people won't like to trade, and you know, meme coins are the current meta in the crypto space. You know, it's interesting. I think the regulation in the U.S. is responsible for a lot of the meme coin trading, believe it or not. So, you know, previously, crypto entrepreneurs tried to build cash flows into these tokens, governance rights. they tried to make them as equity-like as possible, right? Because they felt like they wanted to do right by their investors. In the US, the Securities and Exchange Commission took a very negative view of that. And their view was, paradoxically, the more you build in cash flows and real assurances into these tokens, the more we're going to come after you. So the reaction to that was a bunch of folks just created meme coins. They're promising nothing. There's no cash flows. There's nothing associated with
it.
It's just a name, right? So I think that's actually partly responsible for the explosion of meme coins. It's a law of unintended consequence. I think the SEC shot themselves in the foot there.
Isn't it good to see you, brother?
Thank you.
Also good to see is the rise of Bitcoin L2s. And here amid all the L1s and exchanges, etc., is a new novel idea on how to create a Bitcoin L2. This one's called the GOAT Network.
One of the big topics of discussion, not only here at the conference, but actually in Singapore, is around Bitcoin L2s, or in fact, L2s, the L2 discussion. Now with me, I've got someone who's building something very interesting. Initially, it's going to be a Bitcoin L2, but what he tells me is that one day, it's going to be an L2 for all networks, one universal L2 for all networks. Tell me about the Bitcoin L2 that you guys are building at GOAT Network.
Okay, well, thank you for having me. We're building a Bitcoin L2, which is among all now the many L2s that are getting built, but our distinguishing feature, which we're actually very proud of, is we're trying to deliver the more secure L2. In a sense, you may think about it as L1.9999, which is a little bit better than L2. That mainnet, inheriting the mainnet security at the lower cost possible. In fact, we call it a ZK rollup, the most costly efficient ZK rollup that allow you to inherit this security. And at the end of it, allowing users to get sustainable yields for a long term, not short term, whatever, and then at the end they disappear.
So how does it work? So you got an L2 on top of Bitcoin.
It's developing an L2 on top of Bitcoin. This L2, think about it as an environment, an experiment for which people actually can experiment, can do their financial activities, cheaper than L2. You're not reporting to L2 each time. You're basically just reporting the ZK knowledge at its point of time. There are many ZK rollups. That's why I don't want to get into the details of the technicals. There are many. What distinguishes us is, what is the cost of the ZK rollup? What I'm actually spending a lot of time doing is that I can tell you that it's not efficient to do a ZK rollup if you don't have decentralization. Our proposition is that decentralization makes ZK rollup feasible, cost efficient, and because it's cost efficient, whatever revenue minus cost equal yield, revenue minus cost equal profit, sustainable profit, competition across the sequencers will get you a sustainable yield.
So on this layer two, what am I using? It's called the GOAT Network, right?
It's a GOAT Network.
And
you
what
use
am I using as gas? Am I using the GOAT token? What am I using?
You're
as
using
gas?
Bitcoin as a gas. You're giving Bitcoin as a yield. It means one of the things we believe in, and that's happened in many, many times, and anytime you receive a GOAT, we have a GOAT, we have a GOAT token too. But it's very important that users are receiving also BTC because they are actually paying BTC.
So you stake your BTC to secure the network, so to speak.
You stake your BTC to stake the network. You help it, well, not in one sequencer. That's important. That's actually the foundation of what we do. The foundation of what you do is that you don't have a centralized agent that you stake with. You have decentralized agent and you can be one of the sequencers. If you're interested, you become one of the sequencers. And we say you are very good at marketing. I'm going to actually come to you, but we have to put something at stake. Or maybe another company comes
so
up and says,
I stake my Bitcoin, it's stake decentralized, there's no honeypot for
centralization.
For centralization.
And whatever they make, those sequencers are going to try to do operations. Whatever they make, they share it with you.
And I'm earning my yield in
you're
Bitcoin.
You're earning yield in Bitcoin and portion is it in GOAT token.
Okay, but then the question is, then what's the GOAT token for?
Well, the GOAT token has multiple aspects. First, it boosts, it's a governance, because the consensus in the network is actually using GOAT token, not using BTC, because you need something in limited supply that you can create consensus in Bitcoin, one. Number two, it boosts your reward, because whatever you got, it's a governance, it's a boosting.
Boosting and governance.
And boosting comes in two forms, which is actually very key here. Because the more GOAT you have, remember we have multiple tokens, multiple sequencers, the likelihood for you to be chosen, Panther, is not only how smart and handsome you are, it's also how how basically GOAT you have.
All right, when does this GOAT network launch?
Testnet is launching on this week, mainnet, Q4, TG, January.
January it is, be on the lookout. From Bitcoin L2s, let's go to RWAs. Bringing all things RWA or real world assets on chain is Mantra. The only question is when.
So fresh off the DWF stage, a big talk about real world assets, and it's going to be a big narrative. We know that Larry Fink's been pushing it hard, but when are real world assets actually going to happen? And that's what I'm going to ask you, John. When are real world assets actually going to happen?
I think they're happening now, to be honest. There's a long way to go in the space. You know, I was talking on the stage that I see this as like a multi-phased approach. Right now it's about bringing high quality products and assets on chain, which is really where we're focused. Then we're working on how do we actually make these things liquid? How do we have secondary markets? And then finally, how do we actually make them composable and usable in DeFi and different financial...
Who says that just because I own the token, I actually own the rights to the property?
Well, that's the thing. So right now, a lot of people use kind of existing legal wrappers, setting up an SPV that owns shares in something and then tokenizing that. I consider that kind of faux tokenization, to be honest. Right, what we're actually trying to do is legitimate tokenizing of the asset. In the instance of real estate, that would be tokenizing the actual title deed, right? So not
going to get regulators to agree.
Of course. That's why it's so hard. That's why it's so hard. Because you have to have different stakeholders, such as regulators, the government, you know, all these major players actually taking part in this conversation. And that's why it's not happening, to be honest.
Which jurisdictions are you doing it in?
We're heavily between Middle East and Asia. And you know, our focal point right now is the UAE. So we have a big team in Dubai, a lot of investors and supporters from Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And the UAE, we think, is also obviously one of the hottest real estate markets, but it's also one of the most progressive crypto regulators and kind of crypto regimes in the space. So UAE is a big focus for us.
Now you've got the assets onto chain. You've got to be able to trade the assets. Yep. I guess that you're starting an exchange of sort,
yes,
which is a normal exchange that trades tokens, but
yep,
maybe slightly more regulated.
Yes, so absolutely need regulatory approval for you know, secondary market trading of anything, really. We're in the process of getting licensed by VARA, which is the regulator in Dubai. We're also exploring with ADGM in Abu Dhabi and other places, you know, Bermuda and a few other jurisdictions. That being said, it is quite necessary to have this regulatory oversight because many of these products are, you know, not pure utility tokens, right? So this is a new thing, and it's a new space where we haven't really had the secondary market liquidity, so you do need the buy-in of regulators and say, okay, asset class, case by case, this is how we're going to do it.
So Mantra's building a whole tech stack to be able to solve this.
Yes.
Walk me through the actual tech stack that's required to get these digital assets trading.
Sure. So you know, we're building both the protocol, so the layer one, as well as the application, which is the exchange. And we want that to be like the liquidity hub for real world assets.
When mainnet, sir?
Next month.
Next month?
Yeah, next month, Omtober.
Omtober. Is that like a commitment?
That is a commitment. I've been saying publicly, after the summer, which we are after the summer, and before the US election, which is November 5th, so Omtober it is.
And what that mainnet is going to be what? It's going to be a layer one blockchain.
Layer one blockchain.
Proof of stake.
Proof of stake.
Permissioned or permissionless?
Permissionless blockchain. I think that's incredibly important. We're building a permissionless blockchain that has a permission layer to it. So on the permissionless side, anyone can read and write to the blockchain, but on the permission side, you need access. And this is really where the real world assets will be issued from, and it's kind of our goal and objective to be the ledger of record for real world assets. That doesn't mean that they couldn't go and exist and trade someplace else. We hope that they do, but they have to. We want them to originate with us. And you know, part of Omtober is not just the mainnet. Honestly, that's just the foundation. We have much more exciting stuff, which I'm sure we'll be sharing more with you soon.
Well, tell us, give us like one. Come on, one thing.
Okay, big RWA deals, major partnerships, both at a governmental level as well as a kind of like Web2 giant level. Some pretty exciting stuff.
Big things happening. Yeah, big things happening. Look, guys, we've been telling you about Mantra for a long, long, long time, and now you've heard it from the man himself. Between October and the elections is the mainnet. We're going to hold you to that, sir.
100%.
Thank you for coming, Mantra, brother.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
As you walk around the conference, you'll see plenty of big chains, some shipping, some building, and some even pivoting. We ran into a chain with a testnet that's just launched, Kodi.
Before Token 2049, I told you certain tokens were going to run, and I told you one of them was going to be Kodi, and it did run. Shakhaf, what happened? Why did Kodi run ahead of this Token 2049?
I guess it's all about delivering, right? We've delivered a testnet, as we said we would, with a bunch of new partners and an amazing technology behind it.
Well, the tech, you guys said, is it's a privacy technology on Kodi, which makes it an ETH layer 2.
Yes.
And the testnet is now being delivered. Are people actually building on the testnet?
Yes, we have a bunch of amazing projects that are building on the testnet. Some are very familiar, like MyEther Wallet, right? And Enchain AI and Civic and 15 others. And some are new, and I'm very excited about this. We have Uncaged Studios. We have NFA, which is an amazing project that people will talk about. And Privex that are building the first intent-based privacy DEX.
Wow.
And when is the, so testnet is out now, when is the mainnet going to launch? What's the timeline from now?
It's now about stability and performance upgrades. So we promised people that we're going to be the fastest and lightest chain out there doing privacy. Because right now people need to decide, are they doing privacy or are they doing performance? So with what we've built, we've benchmarked it, and it's about 1,800 times or 3,000 times faster and lighter than anything out there. And it's now benchmarked. We just released the article to kind of like show that. Mainnet is coming by the year's end.
Okay, so that's Coty out the way. I want to talk about Uncaged.
Yes.
I know there's an announcement coming out because I have people here that told me that there's an announcement coming out.
Yeah.
I want to know what the announcement's about.
Yeah, so some people, most people know me as the CEO of Coty, but I'm also involved in Uncaged, the studio that is building Uncaged Soccer. Some people remember it as Monkey League, Monkey Ball, etc. So I think we both agree that Uncaged and MBS are probably one of the most underrated projects and teams out there, because this is an amazing team building an amazing game.
Yeah, I know them because I've met them and I've been there and I've seen the guys. Best gaming team out there, most undervalued gaming coin in the ecosystem.
Absolutely. And you know, the game has shifted to kind of like be FIFA meets Brawl Stars. It used to be FIFA meets chess, now it's FIFA meets Brawl Stars in the sense of the arcade feeling of it. So with that, the team signed a major partnership with a global fashion.
That's what I want to know. Who's the brand?
It's Puma.
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 Okay, so you signed a deal with Puma. What is the deal? What is this deal about?
So this is it's a vast deal. It's a 2-year contract that involves co-marketing. So you know, Puma has quite an audience, so we'll co-market that. We are bringing in, you know, their style and bring it into the game, you know, with new characters and everything around it. So really entwined. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing co-marketing opportunity. I think this is when people will appreciate how underrated Uncaged and MBS were.
It is the most underrated gaming token out there. Guys, you heard it here first. You weren't supposed to hear the announcement, but you did hear the announcement. Okay, now let's get back to looking at the conference again.
To take an in-depth look at the conference floor and to talk about crypto with the most important figures here, the attendees, let's bring in our special correspondent, Addy. She's out on the floor and she's gauging exactly what's going on.
Thank you, Ran. I'm Addy, special correspondent and marketer with Ethernity. Let's see what people at the conference are talking about in the market right now. Here we are in the main foyer in the Aptos Lounge. We have a lot of big names and influencers talking about the market. Hi, I'm Addy with Crypto Banter. Quick question for you today. What do you think about the market?
I think the market is getting to a place where it's consolidating and it's creating a wedge where we are about to be at the perfect place for it to finally break through one direction or the other. And I happen to have a bullish tendency to think that it's on its way up.
Token 2049 has the biggest and the best sponsors.
The current market is being too much regulated by different governments, and so that's why for all the traders it's very difficult to predict, because you have to not be make trades based on your previous knowledge.
We have a bunch of big names out on the floor. Let's see who we have. What do you currently think about market conditions?
I think that we're healing and we're getting better.
You know what? I've drinking the Kool-Aid. I'm bullish on this industry. I think we're just about to see a major switch for the market conditions. In my opinion, 2025 has always been the year in the traditional Bitcoin 4-year cycle. And I think Bitcoin to 100K in the next 6 months, to me, that's obvious.
Going up to the election, things are going to pop off. So I'm definitely watching that. And we'll see what happens with the election. I'm anxiously watching that as well.
Everything is blown up, kind of, but yeah. How can you be not bullish when you see this year?
It's crazy. I mean, they're a bit more bullish this morning, which is quite nice, but, you know, it's slow and steady.
Crypto Banter, I know you. Do you know me?
Despite the sort of fluctuations from a price perspective and so forth, you're still seeing new capital and new entrepreneurs and new builders coming in.
So. We're on the way up. Jerome Powell, he started the money printer, big election incoming, up only, let's go.
Quick question for you, is what do you think about the market?
does that say everything?
And I think that there's a lot of uncertainty just because of what's going on in the U.S. elections. That's going to keep on people, have people guess. I think that the media's playing it up I mean, they're playing up that it's an even race. I don't think it's an even race. I think that we've got I think the Trump team's got an upper hand. They're going to bring us forward in the U.S.
One thing you can't miss is the Bitget Llama and Anime Girls. What do you think about the market? Good take. Justin Son is giving away a lot of Tron here at the conference. Here we have Mir, constantly upgrading blockchain infrastructure with AI. In the middle, we have Ether5. And next up is Gemini.
A bit sideways at the moment. Not great, but I think there's still a lot of room for us to go. So hopefully by year end, we see some explosive action.
Yeah, market is pretty much not good, but I think market is going to be higher like end of this year or just like early next year.
In the middle, we have Bloomberg making their presence at Token 2049. Let's say hello.
I'm optimistic, and I think the good time is ahead of us.
We have a lot of different talks going on. Here, straight ahead, we have the DWF stage. Are you currently trading anything right now?
Actually, I'm going to go buy a bit more Mother Token. I just heard Iggy Azalea's talk, and I thought it was really spot on. I'm a firm believer in like meme tokens and culture tokens. I have a platform called Bala that's like TikTok front end with a DEX underneath.
What are you currently trading right now?
Just Bitcoin, Ethereum right now. I'm staying dry.
And Aaron, what are you currently trading right now?
I'm currently trading whatever Rand Nooner tells me is a good trade. I'm usually making those trades.
Thank you, guys.
Just kidding.
A lot of Bitcoin right now, a little bit of ETH, but playing around some meme coins. The altcoin market actually took quite a bit of a dip recently, so it's been a great time to accumulate some more positions of different things. I'm focused on mainly like ecosystem builds, not just single products. So like your SUI, your SEI, your IOTech, some other ones like that. And I mean, plug for FIO too. That's another one I'm accumulating. We're building.
That's a wrap from the floor at Token 2049. Back to you, Ran.
Thanks, Addy, and thanks for the whirlwind tour here. We can't leave just yet, though. We got to hear from the sponsor's episode, FastX.
So we wanted to get away from the set and go and talk to projects on the floor. And here we are. We're going to talk to the first project, which is actually the guys that sponsored our show today. Armin, how are you, my friend?
Good, how are you?
Good. Listen, Armin, a lot of people don't know who FastX is, and they don't even know the blockchain that it works on. So walk me through what FastX is and who the blockchain is.
So we are L1, L2 blockchain. We are centralized exchange. We are NFT marketplace. We are DeFi wallet. We are payment system. We are cards. So we are full Web3 ecosystem.
What's the blockchain called?
It's called Bahamut. We are EVM, L1 blockchain with amazing consensus mechanism which calling POSA, proof of stake and activity.
And the proof of stake and activity, from what I understand, proof of stake, everybody knows. What is proof of activity?
If you are smart contract holder and your users using your smart contract generating gas fee, the blockchain as a reward giving you back half of that gas fee. So we can call it something like cashback from the blockchain.
If you build good dApps, then, and you're a smart contract holder, you get some of the cashback. All right, tell me about FastX itself.
Slogan is join and learn, so we are going to onboard people from Web2 to the Web3 and trying to that bridge and that road smoothly. So we have amazing customer support service with all languages in a world which you can imagine.
When you say it's regulated, where is it regulated?
Right now we are working with Lithuanian license and covering Europe. After the 1st of January we will work under MiCA license. And also we get the pre-approval from VARA, and very soon, hopefully very soon, we will get the final documentation from VARA and we fully can operate in Dubai.
If you want to learn more about FastX, where can we go?
Just fastx.com.
So guys, that's fastx.com if you want to hear more about this, more about the people that actually made this show here at Token 2049 possible. Speaking of Token 2049, let's get back to the show.
Let's actually take a last look and a last survey of what we actually saw here at Token 2049. We leave here with 20,000 attendees from all over the world, all walks of life, all sorts of chains, projects, builders, developers, coders, funders, exchanges, marketers, traders, and everyday workers at a long litany of companies who are here building crypto all around the world. Now I'm off to the F1. I'm going to be in the pits, in the garage, seeing the roar of the engines, the fanfare, the race up close and personal, like of course only Banter can.
Just been in the pits.
Gentlemen, start your engines, run a good race, cross the finish line, and remember, to trade well, my friends.
Singapore, you've been loud and voice all week for the fan forums. Give it up for Lando Norris.